forgotten as far as on previous days.
So, I hate to be the buzzkill,
Nick said, as they huddled around the final can of Sterno.
But what happens if we miss the deadline tomorrow?
I don't think they'll let us die, but I guess maybe we fail?
Alice said uncertainly, her fingers gently rubbing her temples.
Which entails what exactly?
Herschel interjected.
I think it means we're done,
Vince replied somberly.
They're testing us, just like George and Persephone. I imagine failure here has the same result.
But that's not fair. We've passed all the same standards as everyone else. Why would they hold us to some ridiculously higher standard?
Herschel asked.
Because we're different, Nick replied automatically. We're not like everyone else, so it makes sense that we have different criteria to fulfill.
They warned me to expect it when I took them up on the offer to enroll in Lander.
Mary agreed.
Me too, Vince said.
Ditto,
Alice chimed in.
Roy and me too,
Herschel said dejectedly.
I just never thought they meant this.
Wish you hadn't taken the offer for Lander?
Alice asked him.
Not even a little bit. Yeah, this sucks, but I've had so much fun these last few months. I never knew what it was like to feel normal in any group of people. With Alex and you guys, though, I'm not the freak. I'm just another super,
Herschel admitted.
There are days I think that's the real reason they gave us the offer, Vince speculated. They wanted us to have a chance to see what regular supers felt like, so we could blend in later on.
Maybe so,
Mary agreed.
Not that it will matter much if we can't finish this mountain tomorrow,
Nick pointed out.
We don't know that,
Alice countered.
But we have excellent grounds to suspect it,
Nick shot back.
Then there's only one option,
Vince said, a surprising resolve echoing through his voice. We don't fail. The others were silent for a moment. Vince was so cheerful and easygoing that they often let it slip their mind how determined he could be when the occasion demanded it. It could take them back a step.
I hate to point this out, but you guys realize that tomorrow all you'll have is me, right? And I doubt I can climb as fast as Roy,
Herschel said.
Maybe not, but you're fresh,
Mary said encouragingly.
Roy's done all the labor, so I bet you can easily keep up with our worn-out bodies.
Herschel was about to voice his own lack of surety in just that subject, but the looks on his ragged friends' faces made him think better of it. Instead, he took a cue from Vince and mustered up his resolve.
I will.
If the other days were hard, the sixth day was impossible. They had to move fast to make up for lost time, and as such, didn't permit themselves as much time for breaks. That strategy showed its downside within the first 3 hours, as sore hands struggled to hold grips and weakening spirits began to falter. Each of them wanted nothing more than to slide down the mountain and collapse into a pile of sweet, exhausted sleep. Instead, they kept going up. They halted briefly for lunch and a Vince warm-up, then got right back at it. The day wore on, and as the sun began to descend, hope trickled out of them. If it was dark, they were done. The cold and wind made it too dangerous, and that's ignoring the problem of seeing their way without light. With Alice placing hooks, there were no free hands to hold flashlights. Herschel was puffing hard as the shadows grew longer.
He hadn't been given several months of intense conditioning. He'd let Roy handle that. The only thing that kept him moving was the knowledge that this was only a sixth of the torture the others had endured. As he cursed under his breath and hoisted himself another few inches, Herschel made two promises to himself. The first was that he was going to start getting himself into passable shape, and the other was that he was going to start carrying a bigger emergency flask of whiskey. Vince's nose was bleeding freely again, so he tore off a few scraps of cloth, stuffed them in his nostrils, and let it be. At this altitude, there was nothing else to be done. The only way out was at the top. Mary and Nick were holding together okay, though Nick had several close calls and was able to save himself only because of his excellent reflexes. Mary was able to press herself close to the rocky surface of the mountain and a few times actually held herself up telepathically so she could rest her aching hands. It was dizzying and dangerous, but an assessed risk she deemed to be worth it. Alice's head was still pounding, but she did her best not to show it. She pulled free some hooks from below her team and flew up higher to reattach them. They were coming up on a cliff that jutted out slightly, blocking the view above. It would be tricky to climb, so Alice decided to attach the hooks on the plateau the cliff would be concealing. She floated up past the side, blinked, and moved up several more feet to confirm what she was seeing. When she was absolutely sure, she dropped back down and yelled to the others, "The top! We're almost at the top!" With her news delivered, Alice flew back up to resecure the hooks. As for the other four, while weariness and fear can do a lot to drag down the human spirit, suddenly finding out your goal is in sight can kick the shit out of nearly every negative feeling you've got. Such was the case as the cries from their aching muscles and cold bodies were no longer nearly as relevant as the sense of almost being done. They hurled themselves upward with the last of their strength, leaving nothing behind in their quest to finish. Within half an hour, the last of them, Herschel, was pulling himself over the side and flopping onto the cold but level ground. They rested for a brief moment before dragging themselves vertical to complete the final task. It was Nick who found the phone, using his power and picking a direction randomly. He pulled the device from the snow and removed its waterproof cover. He glanced at his teammates and waited. Then, he stepped forward and handed the phone to Alice. "Make the call," Nick told her.
"Why me?"
"Because I'd be dead, and none of us would be up here without you. Now call those bastards, and let's go home," Nick said.
Alice nodded and accepted the phone. She punched a few buttons, and in mere seconds, a familiar voice greeted her.
"Hello," Mr. Transport said placidly.
"We did it,"
Alice said, her voice weary and cracked, but her tone full of pride. 70.
"We should all pitch in, pool our money, and have those two killed," Nick suggested, soaking in the heat and the comfort of the common room couch.
"Nick, I'm right here," Mr. Transport said.
All five students had been given a chance to take hot showers and unwind a bit. Now they were meeting to talk about the test at Mr. Transport's request.
"I know," Nick said happily, not even bothering to glance at him. "I believe in fair warning."
"Now, look, I know it wasn't an enjoyable experience, but it was necessary," Mr. Transport explained.
He was met with dark glares and grumbling,
Listen, it's Christmas Eve, and I'm sure you all want to get home to your families, so we don't have to talk about this now. Just promise you'll take the rest of the break to really think about what you learned on that mountain. About yourself, about each other, about everything.
I promise,
Mary said, not quite enthusiastically. The others merely nodded in agreement.
Nonverbal is good enough for me. Whenever you're ready, go get your stuff and I'll drop you off at home,
Mr. Transport offered.
Pass, Alice said, waving him off. I'll take my car. I'm only 2 hours up the road.
I can take both you and your car in a span of seconds,
Mr. Transport pointed out.
Still no. I just spent 6 days on a damn mountain. I'm looking forward to a nice, relaxing drive,
Alice reiterated.
Fair enough,
Mr. Transport said, putting up his hands.
When anyone else is ready, I'll be waiting in here.
Herschel!
Mrs. Daniels yelled, flying out of her house to meet her son walking up the driveway.
It's been too long, dear,
she said, giving him a strong hug.
I missed you too, Mom,
Herschel managed to squeak out as she squeezed his lungs.
My, look at you,
she said, releasing her death grip and taking a step back.
You must be at least 2 inches taller than when you left.
You think?
I know my son, don't I? Come on inside. I'll fix up some dinner, and afterward we can get the tape measure if you don't believe me.
Sounds like a plan,
Herschel agreed, dragging his bag inside and depositing it by the door. He'd unpack later. For now, he was just happy to be home. The house seemed just as he remembered it, though now there was a Christmas tree by the fireplace. Underneath were several presents, some wrapped in green paper and others wrapped in red. The red would be for Roy, the green for him, same as it had been for years and years. A spicy scent wafted through the house. His mom would be working on several dishes for lunch tomorrow. On Christmas, they went to Herschel's grandmother's house and met up with the rest of his family. Herschel realized that this was the first year he would be able to enjoy himself at that gathering and not worry about Roy butting in. Still, he might change later in the day. It was Christmas for Roy, too, after all.
So,
his mother said, interrupting Herschel's internal reverie.
Tell me about college. Have you met any nice girls?
Herschel smiled in spite of himself and went over to the kitchen table. He took a seat in his usual spot and basked in the familiarity for a moment before dealing with his mother's question.
Well, there is this girl in my dorm.
Vegas was cold, but that could hardly be blamed on the season. It was a desert. Those were hot in the day and cold in the evening. Nick walked up the familiar landscape of the strip and picked out the lighted monstrosity he called home. One good thing about this town, an unaccompanied minor with a suitcase didn't even draw a second glance as he walked into the lobby of a casino hotel and strode right past the reception desk. Nick would greet everyone soon, but first he wanted to go up to his room and change. He was still dressed as a Lander student, and that wasn't an image that belonged here. His only hope was that the sunglasses and different wardrobe would keep anyone from recognizing him. He should have known better. Nick made it to the elevators and punched the up button. The elevators were gold in color, and the hall was faux marble. It was ostentatious, but with a touch of class, just like the rest of Ms. Pipps's establishment. It didn't quite give him a sense of being at home, However, it was an environment he was comfortable in. For Nick, that was more or less the same thing. There was an audible ding as the doors swooshed open, and Nick took a step back to accommodate anyone exiting. The elevator turned out to hold only one other occupant, a bald man wearing a dark suit. Nick sighed and stepped on board. He knew perfectly well this man wasn't planning to get off.
"Good to see you, Jerry," Nick said evenly.
He would greet his former wrangler more enthusiastically later in the evening. For now, though, there were cameras everywhere, and it was a poor habit indeed to start showing fondness to anyone.
"You look good, Campbell," Jerry replied.
He leaned forward and punched a few buttons on the pad. The elevator began rising to a floor inaccessible to regular guests.
"I wanted to let you know that Ms. Pipps is currently overseeing a high-stakes poker game, but she should be on hand for lunch tomorrow."
"They do put on a hell of a spread for Christmas," Nick recalled.
"Of course. We can't have any of our clients regretting their decision to spend the holidays handing us their money,"
Jerry said.
"Anyway, she'll be around tomorrow. You're on your own tonight, though. I had a couple of your suits cleaned and pressed, and I alerted the staff to expect your return."
"I have missed the people," Nick said.
"You've missed the girls,"
Jerry shot, a bit of slyness in his voice.
"Never as much as they miss me," Nick said with a smile.
The elevator dinged and opened on a plush hallway. The carpet was red, and the trim of the walls was gold. There were very few rooms in this hallway, because up here the designers hadn't been concerned with cramming in as many as they could fit. This was the level that few would ever see, and fewer would ever stay in. Nick stepped off and began heading down to his room. He stopped after a few steps, noting Jerry hadn't exited with him.
"I've got some things to do,"
Jerry said in response to Nick's glance backward.
"If you'd like me to catch you up on things, we can meet in the usual place around 2.
"Sounds good," Nick agreed.
The usual place would be a restaurant a few streets over from the Strip, where he and Jerry had hamburgers and hung out. It was one of the few places away from Ms. Pipps's direct area of influence, and likely Nick's favorite spot in the world. Nick swiped a card at the door and entered his suite. Sure enough, Jerry had laid out a couple of suits on the bed. He always remembered every detail, a habit he had worked very hard to ingrain in Nick as well. Still, Nick's first concern wasn't just with changing his clothes. He whipped off his sunglasses and tossed them on a dresser. He then shed the rest of his Lander ensemble and hopped over to the shower. Admittedly, he had taken a shower less than an hour before, but that had been all about heat and necessity. This was about recentering. Nick always found a shower the best tool for wiping away a character and coming back to himself. Half an hour later, Nicholas Campbell emerged. He promptly dressed, wearing a deep purple button-down shirt with no tie beneath a perfectly tailored black suit. He styled his sandy hair with a tousled look, and adorned himself with only one piece of jewelry, a silver wristwatch. He frowned slightly when he noticed there were tan lines on his face from those ridiculous glasses, and made a mental note to visit a spray bed as soon as possible. All decoration and preparation complete, Nicholas paused only to give the sunglasses a dirty look before striding out the door.
"You're sure you want me to drop you here?" Mr. Transport asked again, just to be certain.
"Positive,"
Mary assured him, enjoying the sound of leaves crunching beneath her feet
and the sticky smell of pine in the air. Don't you want to see your family?
I'll see them tomorrow,
Mary told him.
I wanted to spend one night at home, though.
She was already walking toward her trailer, small bag swinging in hand, as she surveyed the spots that could use repair. Whatever makes you happy, I suppose. Merry Christmas, Mr. Transport wished her. Then he was gone. Mary finished her tour of the trailer, coming back to its entrance and unlocking the door. It was cold inside, but a few minutes after she turned on the generator, the whole place would be thoroughly warmed. Besides, in comparison to her past week, she could barely classify it as chilly. Mary carefully opened her bag and tenderly removed a small brown bear, setting him on the counter.
It's good to be home, don't you think, No?
No was his usual, stoically silent self.
So good to have you home, Miss Adair,
the maid said, greeting Alice at the door and taking her bag.
Thank you, Greta. Tell Francis the rest of my luggage is in the car. Is my father home?
He'll be in China until the end of the week, Greta told her. But he's promised to come home in time to see you before you go back to school.
Of course he will,
Alice sighed, knowing it was 50-50 at best that she would see her father during this break. That might have been for the best, though. She wasn't sure what she would say to him. She'd never really had a grasp of what to talk about with him anyway, but at least before she'd known the right steps and decorum. After her semester at Lander, though, she didn't find the prospect as appealing. Alice had slowly been dropping out of the habit of shying away from real interaction and using polite falsities. She was finding she liked the life she led this way far more than the other. Daddy wouldn't approve, though. Alice made her way up the marble staircase to her wing of the house. Most of the servants were off for the holiday, so she'd have the house more or less to herself, with the exception of Greta, Francis, a few chefs, and some additional support staff. Normally, she preferred it this way. It was less lonely to be actually alone than to be surrounded by people and still be by oneself. As her steps echoed down the empty hallway and she pushed open the oak doors to her pink-themed bedroom, it occurred to her that she'd become far more accustomed to the bustle of Melbrook. Alice laid down on her bed and stared up at the ceiling. There were paintings adorning her walls, along with a picture or two of her father. The only real photograph she held dear was on her bedside table, though. A photo of a beautiful blonde woman with an infectious smile. Alice had digital copies of it, of course, but there was still something special about the original. Alice rolled over on her side and stared at the woman for a few minutes, wondering, for the billionth time, how different this moment in her life would be if that woman were still a part of it. There would be someone waiting for her, certainly. A hug, some conversation, and possibly even a meal prepared out of love rather than obligation. Perhaps Daddy would even be here as well, if that woman was around to wrangle him in. Alice had long ago mastered the art of crying silently, so not one sob echoed through the empty catacombs of her mansion. Thanks again for bringing me out here, Vince said, as he and Mr. Transport walked along a snow-covered dirt path. I'm not exactly certain where here is. We've walked a good way from the city, Mr. Transport pointed out. We're almost there, Vince assured him.
For a few brief moments, Mr. Transport thought back to Nick's death threat jokes and wondered just how much Vince had disliked the mountain test. Then he mentally snapped himself back to reality and realized that while one of his charges might eventually kill him, Vince was easily the least likely candidate on that list. Well, after Herschel. They turned down another path and pushed their way through some brush. This time, though, the scenery opened up, and Mr. Transport found himself staring at a set of lightly snow-dusted train tracks. In front of him was a sheer cliff about 60 feet high that looked down on the scene. The tracks seemed to run back in the direction of town, though they were clearly a long time out of use. Mr. Transport was about to question, once again, precisely where they were. However, the sight of Vince's face paused his words. It wasn't sad, per se. Exposed would be a better word. Soundlessly, Vince reached into his pocket and pulled out a small gold watch. He began winding it carefully, a few clicks at a time. "My dad gave me this watch for my 13th found day. He said I never had to worry about stealing power from it, because it relied on being wound," Vince said, his voice somewhere far away.
"Found day?"
Mr. Transport asked. "I didn't know my real birthday, since I ran away at such a young age. So we just celebrated the day he found me instead," Vince explained.
"That sounds very festive,"
Mr. Transport said uncertainly.
"It was.
I know how bad it sounds, living on the rail, scrounging for food. But it was fun. It was nice to have somewhere I belonged," Vince said.
"Not to overstep my bounds, but it seems to me you have found that once more. And I don't think any of your fellow Melbrook residents would disagree with me."
Vince let out a small laugh.
"I guess you have a point. I think that would make my dad happy."
"I'm sure it would," Mr. Transport agreed.
There was a gust of wind across the tracks, and the sedentary snowflakes bounded about for a few elegant swirls before settling back onto the cold, rusted steel.
"This is where he died,"
Vince said, not as much to Mr. Transport, but to the world at large.
"I try to come by here at least once a year, usually around Christmas if I can. There weren't any recognizable remains of anyone from the explosion, so there's no grave. Just this spot."
Mr. Transport stayed silent. A few minutes passed by, and Vince finished winding his watch. He flipped open the cover, checked the time, then snapped it shut.
"Thank you, Mr. Transport. I know it's cold and wet out here. We can go back to Melbrook now."
"There's no hurry. I'm not expected anywhere until a few hours from now,"
Mr. Transport told him. Vince nodded his understanding. A fresh crop of snow was beginning to drift down upon them, some of it clinging to his hair, changing its appearance to more white than silver. Mr. Transport resisted the urge to shiver. He wouldn't be showing any discomfort until Vince was ready to leave on his own.
"Merry Christmas, Mr. Transport,"
Vince said over the soft winds.
"Merry Christmas, Vince."
71. "So I'm the last one, then?"
Herschel asked.
"Correct,"
Mr. Transport confirmed. Alice again elected to drive back. Nick did the same. Vince never left. And Mary requested pickup yesterday.
Nick drove back? He doesn't have a car.
I suspect that changed over the break, Mr. Transport said. Are you ready to go?
Almost. I just have to run upstairs and grab one thing,
Herschel said, darting up those steps with vigor. Herschel and Mr. Transport had been sitting in the Daniels' living room. Christmas break would be over in a few days, and this was the date Herschel had submitted to be picked up. He was excited and nervous. It would be great to be back at Lander, but time spent there could hardly be considered relaxing or predictable. A few weeks at home had left him restless, though, and he was anxious to see his friends once more.
"Thank you for bringing back Herschel," Mrs. Daniels said, walking into the room and setting down a tray of cookies. "It saves us quite a bit on airfare."
"Glad to do it," Mr. Transport said politely.
"Well, please, help yourself to some sweets anyway. I appreciate what you and the other man have done for my boys all year,"
Mrs. Daniels said with a smile. She proffered her hand, and Mr. Transport willingly accepted. He was surprised, though. He had expected a delicate shake, but instead was treated to a surprisingly firm grip, choking his fingers.
Mrs. Daniels, Mr. Transport tried to begin.
"I'd also like you to know Herschel told me about your little extracurricular test on the mountain, and I am not altogether pleased with my children being put in danger,"
Mrs. Daniels said, cutting him off.
"I can assure you they were always under observation and never in any real danger," Mr. Transport explained hastily.
"And I can assure you that had better be the case. I accept that there is some risk of injury when entering the HCP, but I find abandoning 5 children on a mountain very unacceptable,"
Mrs. Daniels said, in a calm, even tone.
"Noted," Mr. Transport said, trying in vain to wriggle his fingers free.
"Please do,"
Mrs. Daniels said, releasing her grip.
"I may be a normal person, but trust me when I say that being a mother is a power all its own. I think we understand one another now, don't we, Mr. Transport?"
"Implicitly."
"Sorry it took a few minutes,"
Herschel said, descending the staircase with a duffel bag slung over his shoulder.
"Nothing to worry about, sweetie,"
Mrs. Daniels said in a cheerful tone.
"Mr. Transport and I were just discussing how happy you seem to be at Lander."
"I really am," Herschel said. "I miss you, though, Mom."
"Oh, that's my boy,"
Mrs. Daniels said, wrapping her son in a tight hug.
"You don't worry about me, though. You go on and have a great time. I'll see you in a month at Parents' Weekend."
"Awesome,"
Herschel said, finishing the hug and walking over to Mr. Transport.
"Well, I'm ready when you are."
"Take care, dear,"
Mrs. Daniels told him.
"And Mr. Transport, be sure to take care of my sons."
Mr. Transport nodded his understanding and, to his credit, managed not to gulp. It took some effort, though, which, considering he was looking at a middle-aged woman a good foot shorter than he, made him feel not so masculine. He didn't really rush off, but he didn't dawdle either, as he thought of their destination and activated his power.
"I still feel like it's stealing," Vince's voice said, as Mr. Transport and Herschel materialized in front of them.
Vince and Nick were in the common lounge, watching television and clearly having some sort of debate.
It isn't stealing. They offered it up to someone who could fulfill a set of specified conditions. I fulfilled those conditions, so everybody wins, Nick defended. He had just finished his sentence when he became aware the room had suddenly doubled its occupants in the span of less than a second.
Oh, hey, Herschel.
Herschel, Vince said, jumping up from the couch and greeting his friend with a hug.
It's good to see you, man. How was your break?
Lots of fun, Herschel replied, setting down his bag. I saw some old friends, got to eat home cooking, and just freaking relax. Yours?
Not bad. I stayed here for the most part. Tried to keep the same training schedule so the first day back wouldn't destroy me.
Not much else, really, Vince said.
I did something cool, Nick volunteered.
It wasn't cool, Vince corrected him. It was immoral and unethical.
What'd you do?
Herschel asked.
I won a car,
Nick said with a dopey grin. You didn't win a car. You used your power on a slot machine to make the right combination come up. You cheated and stole a car, Vince shot back.
Also, I did this, Nick said. Pretty much for the last few days. Turns out Vince will hang on to shit like this tighter than a miser to his last dollar bill.
Because you haven't made it right, Vince pointed out.
Hate to break it to you, buddy, but there isn't really a process for giving back a car you won off a slot machine. Want to know why?
Because it would be batshit insane, Nick told him.
Glad to see nothing has changed, Herschel laughed with a shake of his head. So, we've still got a couple of days off left. Any big plans?
Tomorrow we go see which class we qualified for and what the rankings for the finals were, Vince said. Nothing on the docket today, though.
Actually, that is incorrect, Mr. Numbers said, stepping into the room from the kitchen. Now that you have all returned, we need to discuss your test.
Mr. Transport's fingers involuntarily twinged with pain.
Killjoy, Nick said.
It shouldn't take all day, Mr. Transport said encouragingly. Plus, once it's over, you still have a day left for fun.
Or for plotting your eventual murder, in the event we don't find your reasoning for that whole stunt satisfactory, Nick tossed out.
You'd need far more than a day to conceive a plan with any chance of working, Mr. Numbers informed him.
Heard and remembered, Nick replied.
Don't be such a drama queen, Mary said, as the door to the girl's side opened, allowing her and Alice to emerge. I could hear your squabbling all the way in my room.
Hey, Mary. Hey, Alice, Herschel greeted them.
Hi, Herschel,
Mary said with a soft smile. Alice merely greeted him with a directed nod.
Now that we're all here, let's get started, Mr. Numbers told them.
72.
I learned never to stand too close to Mr. Transport, Nick said, kicking things off.
I'm actually going to second that one, Alice agreed.
Very funny, Mr. Transport said. Be serious, though. What you took from the test is almost as important as the test itself.
There was a pause of silence before Mary's voice spoke up.
I learned that being super doesn't mean I can do anything, she admitted. I've been able to handle everything so easily now that I can control my power, but none of it really helped me on the mountain.
You helped save me, Nick pointed out.
And Alice helped save us all by securing the ropes as we scaled the mountain,
Mary replied.
My point was that when I was powered, I always assumed supers could just do anything. I was wrong.
Yeah, Vince agreed. The only people with really useful powers were Alice and Roy.
That's because of the environment, though, Alice said. If we'd been stuck in a volcano, then your absorption ability would have been indispensable.
Which brings up another point, Herschel said. None of us is the best in every situation. In fact, there are probably situations where four of us would be totally screwed without our fifth friend.
I guess that's why so many heroes form teams, Vince speculated. Which, for those of you still wondering, is the realization we were supposed to come to, right? Nick asked, looking over at Mr. Numbers.
No comment, Mr. Numbers answered. We were supposed to realize why it's useful for established heroes to form teams?
Herschel asked uncertainly. We were supposed to realize that we are a team, Vince explained to him, catching on. They wanted us to depend on one another, to lean on one another, and to save one another. They wanted us to work as a unit rather than a set of individuals.
But why? I mean, we more or less did our own thing last semester and got through without issues, Alice said. Because it's going to get harder,
Mary told her.
We've done well so far, yes. However, we all are about 10 to 15 years behind everyone else in this program. They've spent a lifetime learning to use and control their powers, while we're just scratching the surface.
Funny thing for the number one rank on the girl's side to say, Nick pointed out.
Yes, I did well. A lot of that was by surprise and luck, though. You were with me in the labyrinth fighting Gilbert. Did it seem like I would have won by myself?
Mary asked. Fair enough, Nick agreed. So what's the point here? Vince asked. That we suck alone?
That we should work together more, I think, Alice said. That we're facing a very difficult obstacle, not unlike climbing a mountain, and that the only way we'll make it is if we work together and are ready to help and save one another.
Nick and Mary glanced at one another from their respective positions. They alone knew that, while Alice was close, there was a whole other reason their caretakers had wanted to instill that team mentality. This was the point where they could steer the conversation to that logical conclusion, or cut things off and let the others believe it was done solely out of concern for their progress in the program.
I think you're right, Alice,
Mary agreed.
It makes the most sense. And it's true. We've got a long way left to go before we're heroes. We'll need to start leaning on each other more as things get harder.
It's a valid point, Vince concurred.
True, Herschel said with a nod.
Personally, I think they did it to kill us and cut open our bodies for science, Nick said. But I guess encouraging us to work together is a possibility.
Were we right?
Alice asked Mr. Transport.
You took the lesson you took, Mr. Numbers said, answering before Mr. Transport had a chance to try. Mr. Transport told you. The lesson you take is as important as the test itself. There wasn't a right or wrong one, only the one you arrived at. I'll say this, though. You five turned a difficult experience into a positive learning opportunity.
That makes my frostbite all the more bearable, thank you, Nick quipped.
Don't be such a baby,
Alice scolded him. I'm pretty sure of all the situations in life I get to bitch about, being abandoned in the freezing snow and told to climb a mountain is right up near the top, Nick shot back. It's over, though, so can we finish this meeting already? I want to swing by the video store and see if they still have Christmas-themed horror movies out.
Nice to know nothing changed over the holidays,
Vince said with a finger pressed to his temple.
I think we've got a good sense of what you took from our lesson, Mr. Transport said. Enjoy the rest of your day. Don't forget to meet here at 10 tomorrow, though. I'm sure you'll all want to see which class you wound up in, and how you did on the final.
And now that will hang over my head all day,
Alice said. You know what's good for that? Nick asked.
We all know you're going to say bad horror movies,
Herschel told him. No, I wasn't, Nick told him.
Fine. What then?
Herschel asked. Awesomely bad horror movies, Nick replied with a wide grin. You kids have fun, Mr. Transport said, rising to his feet. We're going anywhere that isn't here.
He and Mr. Numbers vanished, leaving the students finally alone and back together for the first time in several weeks.
So what kind of car did you win, anyway?
Herschel asked. Beetle, Nick told him.
Stole, Vince corrected.
Damn it,
Alice groaned.
Seriously, Herschel? They've been like this for days. Please don't reignite this crap when it dies,
Mary said.
My bad,
Herschel said, putting up his hands.
Okay, look, Vince, you've been plugging away at me on this relentlessly, and I haven't caved. Now it's apparent we're bothering those around us. So how about we say that this is an area of murky morality and just agree to disagree? You think I'm wrong, I think I'm right, and neither of us seems to have a shot at changing the other's mind, Nick said.
Agreed, Vince said, after a brief pause. I still think you should give it back, though.
I'm well aware, Nick told him. Now, who wants to ride my ill-gotten gains to the video store?
73.
Welcome to the Halls of Horror, Nick declared as the guests walked into Melbrook.
Good to see you too, weirdo,
Sasha said, giving him a quick hug. Greetings were exchanged all around as Will, Jill, Julia, and Alex followed suit. After procuring a few choice cinematic classics, the Melbrook students had decided to see how many of their friends were back from break. As it turned out, the answer was all of them. Vince appeared from the boys' side lounge, dragging in some extra chairs. Since there were so many people, they'd elected to hold the movie marathon in the common room, and thus needed to increase seating. He stopped and set down the four-legged burdens, then noticed everyone else had arrived. It was good to see them, with one being a bit more warmly appreciated than the others.
Hey, Vince said, walking up to Sasha.
Hey yourself,
she replied.
You look nice, he told her.
Missed you too,
Sasha said, with a slowly spreading smile.
Yeah, this is totally comfortable for everyone else watching, if you were wondering,
Julia tossed out.
Sorry, Vince said, blushing rapidly.
Speak for yourself, Sasha said. I'm not ashamed to say I missed my man.
That's okay, we're ashamed enough for you, Nick tossed out.
Alice punched him in the arm reflexively.
Damn it,
he swore.
You'd think a guy as smart as you could handle a little pattern recognition,
Mary pointed out.
Real funny, Nick said, rubbing his arm. I'm gonna go set up the movie.
Good timing, Herschel said. The popcorn will be done in a couple of minutes. Anybody want a soda before we start?
A few people raised their hands, so Herschel bustled off to the kitchen. Julia let out a sad sigh.
I was really hoping Roy would be around my first night back.
Take a cold shower,
Jill chided her.
I'm sure he'll show in a day or so.
But I haven't seen him in weeks,
Julia continued complaining.
Man, you really don't get the point of a booty call, buddy, do you?
Sasha asked.
Psst, with Amber spending all her time out with her boyfriend and you two being prudes, someone has to be getting a little in that dorm,
Julia said.
And it might as well be a little that is toned, fit, handsome, and skilled.
I'm literally begging you here. Please stop talking,
Mary jumped in.
This is leading to mental images I'd really rather not have to deal with.
Fine, Julia said, crossing her arms. But I'm still hoping he shows up.
That's your prerogative, I suppose,
Mary said.
Though personally, I'm glad we get to spend some time with Herschel.
Vince had a feeling Herschel would very much wish he had been present for that particular statement.
I've got the drinks, Herschel said, walking back into the room. Popcorn will be done in 30 seconds.
Which will be just in time, because we're about to watch Mad Santa Massacre, Nick said, twirling the remote in his hand.
Joy, it'll be just like our Halloween movie session all over again,
Will said, speaking for the first time.
Except this time it might be someone else who screams like a girl,
Jill chuckled, throwing her arm around her twin.
My device was more realistic than even I expected,
Will said defensively.
Which is why it is being redesigned. Only you could take something back to the drawing board because it was too good,
Jill told him. A loud ding echoed through the room.
And that's the popcorn, Herschel said. Okay, folks, time to get started. It sounds as though they're hosting a kegger out there,
Mr. Numbers noted, as he and Mr. Transport sat at their kitchen table.
They just got back from break. It is completely natural for them to rejoice in seeing their friends,
Mr. Transport said.
I never said it was unnatural. I merely insinuated it was annoying,
Mr. Numbers pointed out. He took a long sip of tea from the steaming cup in front of him.
You seem edgy,
Mr. Transport noted.
I just spent a full week with my mother,
Mr. Numbers told him.
You'd find your nerves diminished in tolerance as well.
I suppose that's fair,
Mr. Transport acquiesced.
How do you think they'll take discovering their classes tomorrow?
Perfectly well, Mr. Numbers said. There aren't any big surprises, after all. It's been clear from the beginning who had the talent for combat and whose skills lay in other areas.
You're right. I'm just a little worried. There's always been a stigma of the combat supers being more elite, more valuable. I'd hate for our students in alternative training to feel like they somehow failed to measure up.
Be reasonable, Mr. Transport. They're just thankful not to be destroying buildings or drowning in a sea of errant thoughts. I sincerely doubt any of them will care if they are perceived as less cool than their peers.
My understanding is these programs are exceptionally competitive, Mr. Transport said. It's not unreasonable to worry about how they'll cope with additional social pressure.
We left them on a mountain in the middle of December. I'm confident they can handle quite a bit of pressure,
Mr. Numbers said.
True, Mr. Transport agreed. I was impressed by the lessons they took from it. I thought for sure some would go down a negative path.
I was more impressed that Mary and Nick decided not to reveal the whole reason we did it,
Mr. Numbers said.
Do you think that means they trust us?
I think it means they are giving us some metaphorical rope to see where our loyalties lie and what we do with our position over the group,
Mr. Numbers informed him.
Let's hope we live up to their standards,
Mr. Transport commented.
I'm less concerned with their standards and more concerned with the schools,
said Mr. Numbers.
Things grow increasingly more difficult from this point on.
Still, it would be nice if they knew we had their best interests at heart,
Mr. Transport said. Mr. Numbers resisted the urge to point out that this statement would be easier to demonstrate if it were actually true. Despite years of service, Mr. Transport still had a streak of idealism in him.
and it was a trait Mr. Numbers had resolved to foster in his companion for as long as he could. He was amazed it had endured for these many years, though each year seemed to edge it closer toward its inevitable destruction. "Indeed," Mr. Numbers said simply, turning his attention back to his tea. The lone figure stood outside the Melbrook dorm, obscured by darkness and hidden behind a tree. In the abundance of shadow, it was difficult to make out a definite shape or the sex of the figure, only that it was watching the flicking lights from within intently. The figure stood there, unwavering, confident its hiding place wouldn't be discovered. It waited for hours, watching until the hour grew late, and the guests emptied out and returned to their respective dorms. It lingered on even after that, seemingly unwilling to abandon its place quite yet. Eventually, it left its obscured position and moved quickly across the campus, sticking to the darkest patches to maintain its anonymity. 74.
As I call your name and say your new training program, line up on the appropriate side of the gym,
Coach George bellowed.
Combat training to the right, alternative training to the left. Those of you with ranks that predetermine your class, please take your places now.
There was a soft scuffle as 10 boys and 10 girls took their appropriate positions at the right and left of the gym. Nervous? Vince asked Alex as they milled together with the remainder of the freshman class. There were only 11 students left after the 20 predetermined ones had taken their spots.
Very, Alex admitted. I mean, we fought hard, but then again, we went down so easily against Selena.
You have nothing to be ashamed of, Thomas said, joining the conversation. You put forth a tremendous effort in our battle. It would be pure folly not to place you in combat training.
Castillo, Thomas, combat!
Coach George's booming voice announced to the gym.
See you on the right,
Thomas said reassuringly, before jogging over to take his side.
Hunt Tiffany, alternative!
A girl with short, blonde hair flipped out at the ends walked over to the left side of the gym.
Riley Adam, combat! Wells Allen, combat! Belden Camille, alternative!
Vince perked up at this name, recognizing it as one of his saviors from Halloween, the one he still hadn't managed to thank. She was difficult to notice in the crowd, but when she broke out to walk to the left side, Vince wondered how he'd missed her before. She was diminutive, even shorter than Mary, with shoulder-length hair so blonde it bordered on white. There was something familiar about her as well, though Vince couldn't put his finger on it. He resolved himself to seek her out after this was over, and thank her for the healing help.
Reed Gilbert, combat! Wilkins Selena, alternative! Murray Jill, combat!
Vince took a deep breath to settle his stomach. He and Alex were the only two left.
Griffin, Alex, combat!
Alex flashed Vince a thumbs up before heading over and joining the line on the right.
And lastly, Reynolds, Vince, combat!
Coach George declared. Vince let out a sigh and threw a smile on his face, heading over to the right side of the gym. Inside, though, he felt a ball of worry knot itself tighter. A part of him had been hoping he would end up in alternative training, so he wouldn't have to keep fighting people. Now he had several years filled with fisticuffs to look forward to.
We'll be giving all of you your midterm grades today in private. However, as promised, we're now going to announce the top three longest survivors and the top three killers from the exam.
Coach George began.
The number three killer was Chad Taylor.